You're listening to T&M Coaching Unplugged. T&M Unplugged features the diverse perspectives of a thriving global community of coaches, leaders, and experts. And it's all for you.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to T&M Unplugged, the space when you're elevating your heart, your mind, and your soul to a completely new level of yourself. The space for you to refresh, to re-energize, to learn new things in the area of personal development and spirituality. Today, we're going to humanize ourselves. We're going to talk about how to be a human leader, how to step into that space that we call human essence, and how to understand ourselves on a deeper level. And today, joining me, it's a dear friend and colleague, Damien Furse. First and foremost, he is a psychologist, which is always scary when you have a psychologist in the call. My God, man, he's going to analyze me all the way through it. He has also worked inside of the personal development industry for more than 25 years. In last 5 years, he has been developing leaders around the world with international coaching and training. He also has his own consultancy and personal development company as well. He has delivered numerous of programs, solution-focused programs, leadership skill programs, stress and anxiety reductions and management, and so on and so forth. Big experience in developing and growing people as well. He is also a lecturer at Brighton University on health and behavioral change. So he is not only shrink, he is a professor as well. So this conversation is going to be serious. Welcome, Damien.
Hello there. I'm not actually a professor. I've not reached that accolade yet. I don't know whether I ever will, actually. But yes, but yeah, I do some lecturing at Brighton University as well, yeah, as all those other things. Quite a cornucopia, quite a myriad of things when you put it across like that. When somebody introduces you like that, you're like, oh my God.
My heart, you're a professor. So it doesn't matter if you don't have that designation. So let's go with that. I think that sometimes people love credentials. They're thinking, oh my God, this is so cool. But lecture is also great, right? Isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, that's great. Yeah. Yeah.
So today we're going to be talking about this wonderful program that you have been developing and working with, which is called A Human Leader. And I was thinking this morning, now more than ever in our lives, it's necessary to become human, and not only becoming a human leader and leading from that space of humanity, but also humanize yourself. So I would love to start this conversation by asking you, what motivated you and prompted you to begin exploring that field of human leadership? And why do you believe this is so important for all of us nowadays?
Wow. So the answer to that question is in fact an entire book in reality. But if we try to boil it down to its kind of essence, I think, well, let's start at the beginning. I think when I first studied psychology, one of the things that sort of astounded me and puzzled me a little bit was that I was learning a lot around Western research, that's 100 years of Western research into how the human being works, what the human being is. And of course, there was lots of disparity. There was lots of conflict between different theories and ideas. However, within that, there was some genuine, really good research that tells us things about what a human being is and how we work. And I thought, well, this is interesting, because do you have to go to do a psychology degree to be able to understand this? Surely this is something which every human being on the planet needs to understand. And perhaps one of the greatest sort of problems that we've got in our Western world is that although there are a lot of self-help materials available and a lot of other psychological materials that have become available in the 20 odd years since I did my first degree, still people don't really understand what they are. And I think, you know, we have all this incredible development in technology, which is exponential, artificial intelligence, nanotechnology, transhumanism, God, but the list goes on for the unraveling of all the new technologies. And yet we are still not in agreement or not using in a very functional and practical way our understanding of what it is to be a human being. So I think that's probably the most essence kind of explanation of why I'm doing this, why I developed this program, and perhaps even why I've done anything that I've done in my life as well in that sense. But this particular program is really about the zeitgeist. It's really exactly like you said, Zoran. It's about how do we better navigate this age of artificial intelligence? How do we better navigate these technologies? Are we at risk of dehumanizing ourselves with the kind of massive social media and the kind of technologies that we have between us now that are standing in the way of our connection? To end up with a working model of what the human being is, to develop leadership so that it's in line with human nature and that it's in line with what we understand from how we develop from birth. You know, the idea that we are actually self-leading and self-transformative. Once we get to a certain level of development, we can start to choose to become less the product of our development and more the product of our conscious intelligence and our conscious autonomy. You know, we can choose. It's one of the things which sets us apart from the rest of the creatures on the planet, is that as human beings, we can actually choose to develop ourselves this way or that way. We take it for granted and we may not even use it, but we have the capacity to do so. So maybe that's the sort of beginning sort of ideas. There's probably some other reasons if I continued that we could go on with, but those kind of things, you know, the idea that we can have a sense of autonomy and control and we can choose what we want to do, that sovereignty sort of aspect of things is very important as well.
Yeah, so we ask really tough questions in this podcast. You know, we go straight to the essence, and sometimes when I kind of drop these questions, people get, oh my God, it's stabilized. So I love what you were saying about this choice, that we have a free will, so to say, to choose how we want to unfold and develop our lives. And we have free will to choose in what direction our life wants to go to. What would you say to people who don't believe that? What would you say to people who are like listening to us and we start with these wonderful ideas and they say, well, do I really choose? Am I really in control of my life? Is this really up to me? What would be your response to that?
I'd say keep contemplating that and keep testing that, because nothing that I can tell you will convince you of that. Only your lived experience will convince you of that. Through the process of the Human Leader Program, for instance, we are looking to facilitate that kind of understanding, that kind of learning, that kind of development. We're looking to get to people to realize that what is the nature of free will and what are the things that they can choose. And you know, this is if we really went into this, this is an incredibly tricky philosophical debate, and one at which I'm not qualified enough in philosophy to be able to go down to the depths of those kind of that maze, if you like. But one in which, through my own lived experience and through my understanding of the psychology choice and the importance of control and autonomy to the well-being of the human being, I think that from those points, it's quite easy to argue for the point of control and autonomy. I mean, you could do this with toddlers, you could do this with teenagers, you could do this with adults. You could say to them, look, if I take away your sense of choice over what it is that you're doing today from moment to moment, how does that feel for you? And the toddler will resist you, the teenager will resist you, the adult will resist you in that sense. So there's something there about us. It's important for us to have a sense of control and autonomy, even if philosophically we are still debating whether such a thing actually exists. It's my current understanding that it does exist. Mm-hmm.
Mine too. But I can feel it sometimes, you know, in these conversations when we introduce certain concepts, especially nowadays when people feel a little bit restricted and they feel a little bit things are happening in external reality against their free will, against their choice. You know, I don't want to move, you know, situation with COVID immediately, but let's just move it in just for sake of conversation. You know, when you are forced to obey to certain rules and regulations that the government has imposed onto you, and you lose a little bit of that sense of I'm free to do whatever I want to be because living my life is the choice. You know, sometimes people get a little bit, you know, destabilized in believing that. That's the reason why I've asked you, because I really want to reinforce that that's the reality for everybody. Even if you're facing limitations and restrictions, we're still choosing, right?
Yeah, I think that's a really good point, actually. I think that kind of really gets the sort of that little centerpiece, because, you know, we are individuals. Maybe in our evolution more recently, we've become more and more of an individual, you know, in some senses. But we are also the most social animal on the planet. We are, I can't remember who coined the term now, but somebody I heard say, we're not social animals, we are ultra social animals. because we are the most social animal on the planet. And so we have a kind of interdependency with each other that requires us to look after each other and to connect in with each other. And some of our conformity comes from that. And we might say that some of our conformity sometimes kind of pushes out our sense of individual choice. And there can be perhaps times when that is appropriate. And there can be times when that is not appropriate.
Mm-hmm.
Some of those history can show us, glaringly when it's not appropriate to conform. But often it's the wisdom of history that tells us that, I guess, in our current circumstance, many people are considering under the COVID-19 crisis how much do they need or want to conform for the sake of peace and looking after their neighbour, and how much does their belief need to be expressed in perhaps a different way if they don't believe that it's as deadly, for instance, which without going into the politics of that, but no. There are a lot of people that the way they're reading the stats would definitely tell them that this is only slightly more deadly than the flu, for instance. Yeah.
Yes. So the good thing that we really want to highlight, we do have free will. We are a choice in any circumstances. And this is something that makes us human. We also hyper-social human being, and this is something distinguished around ourselves. If you were to encounter a star being landing from the galaxy far, far away, and let's say they were to land from the galaxy that, you know, never encountered any human being before, they're completely different species, and here you are, you know, they came to you because you're a psychologist, you're a coach, you're a trainer, you're a facilitator, you understand human nature really well. And they were to ask you, you know, what is that essence of humanity? What is the essence of human beingness? How would you describe this to us? What would you say to them?
Wow. Okay. Well, I'm assuming that they're a living organism.
They are a living organism. Yeah, they're living. So, they're really beautiful. They're blue. Okay, they look like birds. And they're living. They have eyes. They have senses. They just kind of showed up. So they're not artificial. They're 100% living.
Yeah. There are some maybe poetic or maybe not so poetic ways of putting this as well. So there's different ways you can look at it. One is that, you know, we're just like that beautiful blue being, that beautiful blue star being, we are a living organism, and we build ourselves from our environment physically, just like any other living organism does. And we have a kind of code that's within us that allows us to connect into specific parts of the environment in order to build ourselves. So just like a tree builds itself from the carbon in the air through a complex process of photosynthesis and nutrients in the ground and water, which is incredible, isn't it? When we really stop and think about what life is, it's just like when we really stop, it's, even though I know this and said it 1,000 times, I sometimes get goose pimples and just like, wow, what is happening here? This is life. What an incredible set of complex processes in order to do that. And this living being in front of us is also the same. You know, that's pretty crazy. But I would say also that we have developed this kind of, through evolution, this top part of our brain, which allows us to separate ourselves out from our usual stimulus response to observe ourselves. And when we're observing ourselves, we're in this quite mystical sort of state where we're aware of awareness itself. We're no longer our thoughts. We're no longer our feelings. We're no longer, we are the observer of those things. And that this is like an extra little bit that we've got that allows us to self-reflect, make sense of the world, and question ourselves and try to understand ourselves. And so we form intelligence from this interaction between the biological and this observing self. And intelligence arises from this reflective process. I would describe it in this sort of a way as fundamental. And I would say that we have a distinct set of powers that that we are born with as human beings. The observing self is one of them. We have the power of connection. We have the
power
of imagination.
Let's go into those powers, because that was my next question. You're already ahead of me.
Yeah.
So I love how you described us and how you defined the humanity. I would add that we have this amazing sense to evolve as well and transform and grow. Like the organic nature that you have described, which is a complex system that is happening on a daily basis. And sometimes we are consciously aware of the miracle of that, and sometimes we just take it for granted. And what makes us really special is that we can be aware, be conscious, and really witness from the space of observer. And that gets us into our into powers, you know, because part of your kind of program and what you're teaching and coaching, it's the powers that humanity have. And the first one you mentioned was the power of connection. So what is that? How would you describe the power of connection?
Okay, so I guess what's quite interesting around the human being is that we have from birth the ability to seek out a human face, even when our vision is quite blurred, and we can lock onto that human face. And actually, from birth, very soon after birth, we are trying to form a mirror image of the face that we see. Our facial expressions are trying to mimic that. So the power of connection is something which is innate within us, and you know we don't have big claws or long legs when we were born. Yeah. We can't fight off. So yeah. we are inbuilt with the ability to seek out another human and connect straight away, and that's part of our survival. But it's also, so that's the basics of it. But what happens of that as we go through life, as we extrapolate that process through life, is that we build ourselves from those experiences. We build our personality. We become reflections of our developments throughout our lives. At some point, we start to choose as well. But in the beginning, we're just building ourselves in this sense. And so that's the essence of the power of connection. And when we look at what that means in organizations, what we look at what that means in the kind of cultures that we want to create in organizations, well, you know, if we live in a world where stuff is kind of unknown, where there is uncertainty, And we also live in a world where we understand interdependency, whether that's from the smallest amoeba through to how we're interdependent on each other as human beings. And the power of connection is the very power which allows us to form civilizations, companies, political groups, whatever it is. We have to be able to be interdependent. And what we're looking at that is in the Human Leader Program, so that's the background to why we're looking at the power of connection. It's so important. So many things come through that process, but in the Human Leader Program, when we're looking at gaining a deeper understanding of that, so that we understand the real context of it, we can put that into the bigger picture to really get to understand it in its biggest and most meaningful sense, and also then act in the world in a way where we enhance the power of connection rather than retract from it.
Right.
Act in the world where we become excellent at connecting with somebody who might have the opposite view to us. We get able to build rapport with people from various different walks of life in many, many different ways. We're able to use that power of connection in order to eventually create emotional engagement and motivation to look at creating influence in the world.
Right.
And it's this power of connection, which, you know, all of our knowledge, our impulses as human beings, whether it's within a team, or within an organization, or within culture at large, it's taking place through this interconnection. You know, some would say our internet is just a reflection in a way where we enhance the power of connection.
Absolutely.
Rather than retract from
yeah,
it.
Yeah.
Act in the world where we become excellent at connecting with somebody who might have the opposite view to us. We get able to build rapport with people from various different walks. So I know that might sound like I'm going off big picture and then trying to come down to the essence.
But
it's about thriving teams. It's about thriving teams. It's about trust. It's about transparency. It's about psychological safety. It's about interdependency. It's about all these good sort of, these are all very buzzwords in the business world. But the power of connection is the bit which on all those things rely on. You can't get trust. You can't get transparency. You can't get psychological safety. You can't get communication without the kind of connection.
I am 100% with you, because that power of connection is something that always stood up for me when we were talking about the human beingness and this program in particular. Because if we don't have that connection between each other, between ourselves, nothing else is possible. As you said, psychological safety is not there, trust is not there, engagement is not there, you know, so because we don't really know how to connect. So again, kind of interesting question for you. So some people, they really connect well and they relate well, right? So this is something innate inside of them. You know, they come and you feel their energy and they are chatty and easy. And then some people are struggling with that power of connection. So what would you say to leaders or coaches or people who are listening to us who love that notion of power of connection, but they have a little bit of struggle? What would be a little shortcut for them to be able to connect better with others?
Okay, so first of all, the belief in that it is possible to learn this. And sometimes, you know, sometimes I think we can end up with we can end up forming an identity of ourselves based on the idea that we are an introvert. And of course, introverts and extroverts exist in that way. But we can end up forming a self-limiting idea of what it is that we're capable of. Even introverts need to connect, and often introverts are actually very good at connecting. Actually,
yeah.
It's not that they don't have the skills. So I would say, for instance, that we would look at how it is that you build rapport or connection with somebody. Go down to that sort of basics. So we would look at things like what's happening with your voice. How are you using your voice when you connect with somebody? And what's happening with how you give eye contact? What's happening with how you stand with your body language? We would bring it down to these very biological, biopsychosocial aspects, we should say, and how when you can start to use the skill of your voice, the skill of your eyes, the skill of your body language, when you can begin to train and use this well, then your influence as a leader, your ability to gather followers as a leader, your ability to really engage in the world and motivate people will be enhanced, and to communicate again with different types of people, and different avoiding conflict, etc. So we're boiling it down here to what we start at that level of, okay, well, let's take a look at how you're presenting yourself. Tone of voice is such a strongest indicator of emotion. Right. So yeah. What emotion as a leader do you bring into the room?
Yep. Yep, yep, yep.
And is that in your voice? And there's one thing to be authentic about your emotional state. There's another thing to be skillful about being authentic with your emotional state,
yeah,
and being able to be a good communicator, yeah, as well.
Exactly, yeah. And regulate. But what I love, it's natural. That's the bottom line. Everybody has it. It's nothing that you need to not identify if you're unable to create that instantaneous charismatic connections. If you're introvert, there is a way for you to activate yourself into the natural ability to connect to other human beings, because that's natural to all of us, despite of the image that you or identity that you build up for yourself. Wonderful. Love it. Let's go to the power that I really love in this conversation or in this program, which is the power of imagination. What is that?
Wow. Okay. So this is the big one, isn't it?
Yeah.
It may well be that observing self aspect of us that we spoke about before is kind of in some way linked in with the power of imagination, as is the idea that we even have a sense of self. So, you know, I maybe one of the interesting things to sort of bring in here is people can, there's that kind of stock phrase, isn't there? Oh, it's just your imagination, you know, that kind of way of thinking about it. When you think about that, it doesn't make any sense at all. So the imagination actually gives us the ability, and I might sound quite grand here, but it gives us the ability to start to, for want of a word, reprogram our own mind. It gives us the ability to create, to play, to innovate, to problem solve, to think outside the box. It gives us all these kind of things, you know. Everything that we've created, we had to in some way imagine first. We had to be able to use our imagination to consider something within our thought, to consider how a tool could be used for something different, for instance. So we played with it in our heads first. That could fit over there. That could work to do. Oh yes, that could work to do that. So that kind of thing. The other thing about imagination is, which as we said there, is it's about creating the future. It's about planning for the future and deciding what future you want to create so that you can put your will into that. But probably most fascinating about imagination is this simple truth that our emotional mind, which is the source of all of our behaviors, the motivation, the driving force between me saying these words, between me moving my hands, it's everything's originating in the emotional mind. This is what we understand from neuroscience. There's a drive to get something met in the world from our emotional mind. But our emotional mind cannot tell the difference. It has no ability to tell the difference between the things that we imagine and the things that we experience in our concrete reality.
Mm. Wow.
And within that, then you start to see that there is an ability to start to create your own reality or start to develop yourself quite consciously. So for instance, if I say to you right now, there is a wonderful pink elephant with enormous golden tusks and angel's wings flying above the building where you are, and it's winking at you whilst eating ice cream. It's not there, but you've just seen it.
I've seen it, exactly. Okay, and I love it. I love
and you love it.
I'm like, hello.
if you conjure up an image in your head of the last time that you met a friend and you had that kind of laughter where you couldn't stop laughing and your sides were shaking,
yeah,
and every time you looked each other in the eye again, you kicked each other off back into laughter, and you were trying your best to control it, and the fact you were controlling it made you laugh even more. Yeah. And the fact that one of you managed to stop was even funny in itself, and then one of you stops and the other one starts again, and then you can't, you know, like, and that kind of, as we're talking about that and thinking about that and bringing it to life, we can't help but have a feeling that arises in us which relates to that memory, and those feelings that we can bring to life in us through our conscious thought, they create propensities for behavior. So if I spent 10 minutes thinking about that, I might even be in laughter. And then when I get out the door and walk down the street, I'll smile at everybody around me. And when I smile at everybody around me, they walk around and they're likely to smile to somebody else. And joy is spread throughout the world accordingly. But it starts with you starting to be able to control and use your own imagination as a force for your own development, as a power for your own development.
Yeah.
And it's probably the most powerful, if we had to try to choose one of the powers which was the most powerful, it's very difficult to do so because they're all so contextual. But if we look at what we've created in our world, mm-hmm, in terms of the computer we're sat in front of, the rocket ships, it takes connection and it takes imagination to do that.
Yeah.
And it takes people able to decide to grow themselves and have the will to do so.
For me, when I've started coaching myself, this quote came to me very early on: the imagination is the most powerful force available to humankind. And I think it was from Albert Einstein at that time. And I really, really believe that. I believe that the imagination is the most powerful ability that we have as humans. And unfortunately, we're not all trained to activate it or to use it exactly as you said. Sometimes when you use your imagination as a child, they would just say this patronizing sentence, it's just an imagination, it's not reality. But it is reality, because that emotional brain doesn't know the difference between imagination and reality any longer. So yeah, to become that human leader, to become a human in your own life, not only in your leadership life, it's that beautiful dance between you loving, nurturing, nourishing, and giving space for your imagination to grow, right? And to yeah, really see what that imagination is going to bring to you and exactly what kind of the breakthrough, innovation, solution, life you can,
yes,
visualize and magicalize for yourself. So yeah, that's the power. Wow. You're absolutely right. All powers are important, but that one, you know, specifically for the younger audience that is listening, this is something that we really want you to empower you to cultivate, right?
Exactly. I mean, in our current world, I mean, one of the things that gets in the way of us being able to consciously choose what we bring up in our imagination is, of course, our emotional state. Mm-hmm. So if we're in a state of anxiety, or, you know, we're experiencing a lot of stress, then our imagination will be dragged away into a world of worry, of repetitive thoughts, of negative ruminations. And as we negatively ruminate on the things that haven't happened yet, our emotional brain is reacting like they are happening already. And then that creates a propensity for fear. So then if I worry, then when I walk out the door, I won't look anybody in the eye just in case they're a stranger that might want to rob me. I won't smile at people in the street. And so I create a world and beget more fear in that process. And as leaders, we have the responsibility to decide what emotion it is that we wish to create in the organizations and the teams where we work. How do we keep people motivated? How do we keep them engaged? How do we keep them proactive, innovative, looking forward, future-focused, problem-solving, etc., and not lost in the maelstrom of all of the other emotions which drag us down to our lower functioning of our brain. You know, and one of the questions that's perhaps interesting for people who are listening to this, who work in organizations, is to sort of work out, well, which part of the brain is most active in my organization? Is the cerebral cortex very active? Are we all looking for opportunities, analyzing pros and cons? Are we making sense of the world in the right way? Are we reading context? Are we creating a future? Is the emotional part of the organization working well? Do we connect well? Are we relating well? Is there a sense of belonging? Is there a sense that the emotional needs are being met through the process of work and we're in contact with it, our innate motivation? Or are we way down at the brainstem where actually a lot of our feelings are around anxiety and stress, where we've got fight, flight, freeze and fawn responses most prevalent in our behaviors. And when that's happening, that drags energy away from the top of the brain, reduces activity in the cerebral cortex, and increases activity in these lower parts of the brain, and makes us into, if you like, a much more rudimentary thinker. We're only then able to think in black and white. We're only then able to think in yes and no, good, bad, safe, not safe. And we lose the ability to read context, to see in color.
Right.
And actually what we need in our complex world is the ability to do so. And you know, there's lots of, and this also links into the idea of the left and right brain functioning, the divided brain, and how our culture is a reflection of our brains in that way. Which brain is being most active currently in your culture or your organization as well.
Let's activate the right brain as much as we can.
That's what's missing. Yeah.
We need more of that at this moment in time.
Totally.
Yeah. So as we are going through this, there are a few more powers I would love to cover. And, you know, they're all lovely. And, you know, we don't have time to cover them all. I'm just going to read them through and then you can pick up which one do you feel we should dive into and unfold a little bit more for our listeners. So we have the power of rational thinking, then we have the power of emotional engagement, then we have power of attention, observation, and flow, then we have the power of planning, strategy, and decision, we have the power of I, will, and self-awareness, and the power of knowledge and integration. All of these powers, in addition to the power of imagination and power of connection, are the part of this human leader program. And they're beautiful. I mean, I want to be part of this program immediately. I want to learn. So we can unfold other powers at some other time when we record once again. But to kind of come to closure of this conversation, what other power do you believe it's important or feel it's important to be unpacked right now or share with the audience from the powers I've shared?
That's a very good question. Which one am I going to choose? I think the power of emotional engagement is obviously important. Maybe have a little look at the power of attention, and how that works actually. And this sort of relates to some of the courses that sort of been involved with recently, and looking at how do we create focus. And this was a program, a hybrid program, virtual sessions, and a digital program that is about trying to help people working within an organization to develop the right kind of focus of attention for the task, should we say. And it leans a little bit on this left and right brain aspects of things, and the fact that, you know, a lot of tasks require us to be left brain. So we kind of give attention to the world in two different ways. To explain both of those ways fully would take whole podcast in itself, at least. So let's just try and do a shorthand way of looking at it, or come on the course and learn. So our left brain tends to be sequential in its thinking. It tends to be quite logical. It tends to say, okay, this, then that, then this, then that. Yes, and it tends to want to get a task done very quickly, and it works in the known. It's not necessarily good at reading context, but it's very good at logical step-by-step process kind of thinking. And it seems to be very interested in creating convergent thinking. So it wants to get to the answer as quickly as possible. It wants to have the detail, and it wants to focus attention in this way. Now, much of the tasks that we might consider to be the kind of tasks that are repetitive or routine require this kind of left brain approach. Much of the tasks that we might see that require computer programming, for instance, or some of the more sort of tech-based tasks require this kind of thinking quite a lot. And that's one particular kind of attention. Now, that kind of attention is great when you have a task to do which is sequential, which is detailed, which is focused, and which is all about the known. Yeah. Our right brain, on the other hand, is divergent in its thinking. It's more likely to take a piece of information and rather than try and say, well, I know what that is, it's this and this and this, and then we've got the answer. It's more likely to say, well, this is related to this, and I can see how that's related to that and how that's related to that. And so the thinking becomes divergent and more free associative. And thus it's more able to read context in the world, to understand much more deeper context. It's much more about implicit meaning. The stuff that, so when you read a poem or you look at a piece of art, for instance, there's a transmission taking place which the right brain is able to understand, which the left brain is kind of like maybe not picking up, but depends on what kind of art it is as well. So there's, you know, depends on what's going on there, because both brains produce different types of art. This is really studied in art history. This is very interesting to go and look at this, actually. Those of you who are interested in art or art history, how the two types of the brain produce different kinds of art. But this part of the mind is much more about looking for the answers out there. What's the next big? What's the stuff I don't know? You know, I'm interested in the stuff that I don't know that might be related to this. What's the stuff I'm not seeing that might be important for me to see? That might be from a different field of knowledge. Might be from a different department in an organization, maybe, you know, or somebody who has a different kind of brain. And so so learning to try to make sure, or you know, when we're looking at the power of attention, what we're doing is we're trying to make sure that we actually have a little test during that as well. So look at how left brain and right brain you are. And then depending on the person who's on the course, how the course is working, we will then look at exercises that will help people to develop more of their left brain or more of their right brain thinking in order to balance the two out. When you balance the two out, what happens is you get this fully functional, fully operational human being, if you like, or you at least get close to that. Because what you're doing is that, because what the left brain, I'm not against left brain, it's pretty, you know, it creates
useful.
The world in which we live.
Yeah, it's useful.
We wouldn't have the computer without it, so we wouldn't be here doing this. So it's super essential to everything that we do. However, the kind of the problem is that the left brain only knows what it knows and isn't it can't include the information from the right brain. That's the quickest way of saying it. The right brain can include the information from the left brain.
Wow.
So if we're only seeing the world in a left brain way, we are narrowing our view of the world, and we make decisions from a very narrow perspective. But when we include the left brain and engage the right brain, we widen our perspective. So our decision-making, our ability to understand the world moment to moment actually increases. Our ability to make sense of the world in a way which is much more meaningful than perhaps one of the brains by themselves kind of arises within us in that process. And so that's the background to it. But the practical application of it is really about understanding that when you're working, when you're living, when you're, you know, are you using left brain stuff when you should be using right brain? Are you using right brain stuff when you should be using left brain? Because if you are, then the problems that then become compounded, ripple out from that, can actually be within organizations and within culture itself, can actually be pretty destructive. I've worked in healthcare for 17 years, and you can see this within governmental structures as well. If all you're looking at is the stats and not the context, if all you're looking at is trying to even out the books, then there's a big picture thing that you're not even seeing, which eventually will come back and kick those books in the butt. It doesn't matter whether you managed to even everything up or made a biggest profit than you did last year. Because there was something happening outside that sphere that you weren't even looking at. Thus the banking crisis of 2008.
Exactly. So,
of extreme left brain thinking.
How is that relating to attention and focus? So, you know, we got the bigger picture behind the left and right brain. I really love that. So how is that relating to us being able to have a more define attention or to have more power in our attention?
Great. So there are practices which help you to to converge your attention and become very focused so that you can do prolonged periods of concentration and keep focused on one particular task if that's something that you struggle with. And there are practices in there which are much more about trying to develop the right side of the brain, trying to go into the unknown, trying to open up that part of the brain. So there are practical practices that people can do once they've assessed themselves to work out which side they need to pick, which focus of attention they need to develop more. Of course, that also depends on what the task at hand is.
Yes.
So if you're a computer programmer and all you do is program, and you need to have that detailed, yeah, focused, logical, sequential process in the way in which you work, then your efficiency lies in that. Yeah. But if you're an administrator in the government, then actually your efficiency doesn't lie in this narrow looking at things. Your efficiency actually lies in being able to look at what's happening in wider society, what's happening with agriculture,
yep,
you know, what's happening on much, much bigger picture and how everything's interrelated. Mm-hmm. And it's that interrelatedness, that complexity, and seeing the whole is greater than the sum of its parts, which will give you the wisdom that you need to make better decisions and act more wisely as a leader.
Yeah, as a leader in your own life, as a leader in organization. What I can tell you based on what you shared with me so far, I'm definitely going to, you know, call you professor from now on. I mean, you know, I've learned so much. I mean, I don't care what is written in your CV. You are a fantastic lecturer, fantastic professor. I've learned so much in this, you know, like 45 minutes we have had together. Thank you so much for that. It's really, really insightful. And I'm sure the audience is going to benefit from this conversation. So one last thing I would love to ask you and then leave our audience with it. What would you like to recommend to anybody who is listening to this podcast to start practicing with? You know, we in coaching kind of conversations in this podcast love to leave people with practical steps. We managed to give them few along the way, and I'm really happy with that. But anything else that you feel you would love to share or give or empower people to play and practice with as a result of listening to this conversation?
I think in our current world, probably one of the most interesting little practices, and it's only a little small practice, so it's one that you can go out and do. It's a contemplative practice. It's not necessarily a meditation where you're trying to get rid of your thoughts and all the rest of it. It's a contemplative practice, and it's a practice where if you take maybe an opinion that you've made because you've looked at a bunch of information and you've followed that information trail, and you've got to the point where you've formed your opinion and you sit in your opinion and you think that you're right and you're willing to argue with people and you're willing to do that and you think that you're right, please stop and actually actively try to think the opposite. So literally try to go to the point where you think the opposite and start to, and do that as an exercise. Literally put yourself in the other person's shoes. You know, some schools do this, particularly in Scandinavia, from what I understand, where actually from quite a young age, I can't remember what it's called, but they get people to argue from the side that they disagree with.
Yes.
And to gather the information accordingly. This exercise for the brain, this working with polarities within the brain, and being able to do that in an active way, not just thinking about it, but actually really actively think about this and think about, well, what is it when somebody seems to be so in opposition to you? How is it that they can feel that they are so right? And try to sit in those shoes, try to understand that. This will allow the neural networks of your brain to get out of the kind of little valleys and paths that they've got used to, which you might hold on to, and allow the neural networks of your brain to start to develop. And as that happens, you might find a third way, which has got a deeper and a wider context than the other two polarities had. And this kind of learning then can help you to move forward as a leader. And good leaders need to be able to hold polarities inside their mind. A good leader needs to be able to do that, because it's from that position that they'll be able to make much wiser decisions about themselves and who they are and about their teams and their organizations around them.
I just want this to sink in to the listeners. I am not going to comment or share anything else, because that was a beautiful closing of the beautiful conversation. Damien, thank you so much for being with us here today. Thank you so much for the listeners for listening, and we'll see you soon on the new podcast. Bye for now.
Thank you. Bye-bye.